Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain. My opportunity to step away from the worlds of politics and law you watch me cover every day on WGN TV. But we enter into the world of theater and the arts. And, you know, arguably, maybe politics isn't all that outside of the interview that we are about to do. You'll understand as we get into it, because we're going to be talking about the play that is going on now at Victus Theater, located in the Windy City Playhouse over on Irving Park. It is Network. And if you're going, wait, wasn't that a movie? Yes, it was. Like, didn't that win a bunch of Oscars? Yes, it did. And now it is an amazing cast going on at the theater. I saw it recently, and I just called these guys and went, please, let's talk about it, because I love it so much. So joining me is, we'll go to the star first, the star of the show playing
That's
Howard
Charles, Steele. Right?
Well, he asked me to say his name first, and I said, no, we're going to go with Jim Toronto. Would you prefer I call you Elton? What name do you like?
No, I'll stay. We're in the theater world, so I'll stay with Jim here. When I'm on the radio, I'm Elton Jim. And in fact, in the theater program, I'm James.
That is true. And I was going to do that, but I thought, nah, you're such a warm guy and whatever. And by the way, so for people who are recognize you going, wait, isn't he WGN Radio? Yes, he is. And you know him from there. And by the way, I came up to you before the show. I was uncomfortable whether you wanted that, but I said, well, I'm just going to greet you while you're in character and greet you as your character.
Yes. In fact, you scared me, as you walked up, and I was glad you called me Howard. And so that's why I played along, and I was hoping that Charles wasn't looking, because he is very strict on us being in character as soon as the doors open. And so I saw you walking forward, and I said, I hope he doesn't say hi, because I can't say hi to him. But then you said Howard, and I said, ah, okay, enjoy the show. And that was still okay within the realm of my character.
Well, Jim, let's find out. Charles, was that okay?
I have to confess, Jim. Paul actually came up to me beforehand and was like, "Is it okay if I talk to Jim?" Do it.
Well, just so you know, I was staying within character. I didn't say hi, this is Jim. I said, this is Howard. So very
right.
Good.
So just so you know, you see, I do play by the rules. I did get permission ahead of time, and also figured that would be the way to do it, and it was appropriate. But also joining us, now that he's talked, is Charles Eskenazer, who is the founding artistic director of the Invictus Theater. I'm going to just start with you, Charles, because when you and I, and people can go back on the podcast, you and I chatted, just you and I, about the history of the theater and the mission and all of that. So people can check out that interview. It wasn't all that long ago. But I was so excited when I read that Network was a part of this season. Now, you're known for doing Shakespearean things. Maybe this isn't so far outside of that realm in many ways, but explain to the viewers, to the listeners, how does Network fit within the mission of Invictus?
Oh, my goodness. Well, so we're a heightened language-based theater company, and people ask, what is heightened language? And I say poetry, and, you know, think of Shakespeare. That's a great way of approaching it. And, of course, Network, Paddy Chayefsky, I mean, he's as close to Shakespeare as you can get, a modern-day Shakespeare. I mean, Jim can probably expound more, actually speaking the words nearly every night, but it is operatic and Shakespearean, and he uses all the same rhetorical devices that Shakespeare does. I mean, it's incredible, incredible language. So, of course we had to do it. And it's a relevant piece too. So
one more question for you, Charles, and I'll go to Jim. There's something more in the first act than the second act, but there's something Mametian about this, David Mamet. There's something about the delivery and the pacing of lines that struck me earlier in the show, in the interaction, as almost a little homage to David Mamet. Am I off base on that?
I don't think you're off base. I would certainly say so. I know Mamet has sometimes this writing of like very staccato sort of writing, and it's almost like bullets coming at you. And I would say that's definitely the newsroom that we've created. And I think Paddy Chayefsky and Lee Hall, who adapted it, did a great job of bringing that world in with the language. So I think that's spot on.
By the way, I had a copy of Sexual Perversity in Chicago, which he wrote, and I had somebody have him sign it for me, and my request for the way he signed it, which he did, was thanks for helping me write this. So I will be filing a lawsuit soon, and trying to get some royalties, because that became the movie about last night. Right. So Jim, for people who know you only from radio, they might be surprised to hear that actually performance, dramatic performance, as in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, also done by Invictus. And I'm just so sorry I did not see that production. Please do it again.
I'd love to remount that one.
but Jim, talk a little bit about just this mixture. There's the music end of You and the radio end of You, but there is this dramatic theater. I guess kind of they all go together, right? It's all theatrical
art. Well, yeah, I think it's all performance based. I mean, you know, you're on television, even though television is nothing more than a circus, a carnival, full of acrobats. I was delivering this line from the show that says that television is a carnival. It's an amusement park. It's acrobats and storytellers. And I saw you turn and talk to your seatmate, and I hoped I wasn't insulting you because you're on television, but no, I think that, you know, to your earlier comment, which is very interesting about Mamet, I've done David Mamet, I've done Glengarry Glen Ross, so I know how difficult that is. And as Charles said, you've got to get that pacing, but it's written that way. And that's the great thing, as Charles said, these monologues that I have are Shakespearean, and they're so well written. There's alliteration, and there's the cadence and the pacing is written into the text and the copy that, believe me, to people say, geez, how do you memorize these? They're so long. But it's almost a joy to learn them. And when I'm delivering them, you don't want to miss a line. They flow. They make sense to you mentally. Hopefully I'm conveying that to the audience. But I look forward. I said to Charles early on in the rehearsal process, this show is so much fun. I hope the audience has as much fun watching it as I am having doing it and as our cast is doing it. But to your original question, yeah, I mean, you know, I came to acting a little late in life. It was my goal. I actually had an internship at Channel 2 News here in Chicago. Part of my Howard Beale has a little Bill Curtis in it. I was at Channel 2 when Bill Curtis was there, when he reunited with Walter Jacobson in the 80s. And that's when I was there, and I would observe him every day. And so there's a little, at the beginning, there's a little Bill Curtis there. There's a little Walter Cronkite there because of the time in terms of the news broadcast. But so I came to acting a little later. But at the end of the day, I think whether it's radio or television or news, you know, Don Henley had a great line in Dirty Laundry, which was a diatribe against television news. His song Dirty Laundry said, I could have been an actor, but I wound up here. So being an anchor person or an actor, I think it's still, as you know, you're performing in some extent. You're to the camera, to the audience. So it's a different art. It's a different craft, but it's the same basic foundation of performing and speaking well. And one reason why I love to work with Invictus is because of the plays that they choose. The three shows that I've done now with Charles and the theater, Virginia Woolf, Crucible, and now Network, are all, you know, Arthur Miller and Edward Albee, and now Patty Chayefsky. From an actor standpoint, to be able to deliver these words and create these characters and use the language, as somebody that I enjoy good language, it's been a joy.
Well, by the way, the new season, Charles told me he's doing Fiddler on the Roof, and I'm playing Tevye, so don't even think about it, Jim. I'm just realizing you look more like Tevye than me, so I'm already nervous about this. But this is a question for both of you, because I don't know if you have to be of a certain age or not. My partner's a bit younger, and so he hadn't seen the movie Network and stuff, but I, of course, remember it so vividly. So, Charles, the question for you part of this is, when you have a movie that is so iconic, and when you have portrayals of Peter Finch, who won the Academy Award, passed away, I think, only 3 months before the awards were given. He probably didn't know he won. And Faye Dunaway, who won. So when you go into a show like this, are you thinking, I have to be sure that my cast is not about to do their version of Peter Finch and Faye Dunaway? And then I'll come to you, Jim, to basically find out, how do you deal with the fact that Peter Finch preceded you in this role and so iconically so? Charles, was it a worry for you?
Not really, actually. I mean, when I cast my shows, I have full faith in my actors and believe in them, and they show me something about the text and about the work that we're doing that surprises me and is new and engaging. And I, you know, there is, of course, and I'd seen the movie a couple times before we did the play, and of course that was the thing that inspired me to want to produce it. And so there is always the kind of echoes of it in the back of your mind, but it's not about recreating it or replicating it. It's really about what are these actors bringing to it. And I think almost creating this new piece, and of course paying homage to what's come before. You can't ignore it because it's in the cultural consciousness. I mean, the line, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore." I say network to someone, and anyone who's seen the movie has been like, "Oh yeah, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore." So you can't ignore that, but you also, you know, these are different people that are putting this show on, and they have their different experiences, and that's what makes theater so beautiful and alive, is that, you know, Jim's Howard Beale is totally different from Peter Finch's Howard Beale, because Jim is a different human being and he's got different experiences and different perspectives, and that's what makes it exciting and alive and dynamic. So I no, I wasn't intimidated by it at all. And I think it's an exciting challenge.
And well, and Jim, we'll go to you on that. We'll see if Charles is correct, because he's speaking for you. But how about you?
You think I'm going to disagree with my director?
No, but
I
I'm gonna expand it a
have to
bit.
get cast in another play.
Right, that's a good point, Fiddler. But
Yeah, Fiddler.
here's the problem, because you just did Virginia Woolf, so it's not like Richard Burton is anybody you want to be influenced by. So I will give it to you as a broader context. You are playing these iconic roles that have been played by iconic actors and legendary actors. So how do you address that? Or is it just out the window and you say, "Sorry, it's Jim Toronto doing this one"?
No, it's a good question. It's a logical question. I think it's twofold. I certainly came into this. I have known the network film since I was a little kid. Literally, this is one of my favorite all-time movies. I know the Howard Beale character so well that was my biggest fear, was I know it so well that I didn't want to copy or mimic Peter Finch. However, I do think when you are playing an iconic character, and as you said, I play George in Virginia Woolf, and now this, a very well known, and Richard Burton and Peter Finch, and don't forget Bryan Cranston did it on Broadway and won a Tony. These are not small shoes. These are not small actors. But I do think that I wanted to make it my own, certainly. But at the same time, I think when there's an iconic character and there's people that are coming to the show that is well known, I feel some responsibility to the audience to not deliver the exact performance that they saw before. But I know that if I came to see Network, I don't want to see it done by Jimmy Stewart. I want to see shades or hints or colors of the original that I like, because that's what's drawing me to see this play. That's what brought me there. So I don't throw that all out. I know a lot of actors don't like to see a movie or a play that someone else has done, but the way I look at it is, if it was Richard Burton or Peter Finch, I'm taking an acting class from Peter Finch. Why would I not take some of his advice? He didn't give it to me verbally, but he gave it to me visually, or you know, audio-wise. But at the same time, I have to say this: there is no doubt that my Howard Beale, and I thank you for the compliment, that if I made this role my own, I have to, and I'm not just saying this to blow air up his skirt here. The Howard Beale that you are seeing in this play is due to Charles's direction and discussions with me. I think I would have been able to deliver a powerful Howard Beale, but I think the thing that's coming through from most audience people that I talk to is that this Howard Beale is different because he is human, and because he feels there's a pain in him, there's a humanness in him. He's not just some deranged guy that Peter Finch seemed to play more of, that he was just off his rocker. And this came from a conversation that Charles and I had before even rehearsal started. He's told me, Howard Beale is in pain. And pain has to come through him. And that was one reason why when I was cast, I came to the first rehearsal pretty much with the entire play memorized. Because I did not
I
want
hate people
to,
like that.
What's that?
I hate people like that.
But I did that because I didn't want to learn the character and learn the lines. When I came into rehearsal, I wanted to have the lines so that the entire rehearsal process could be about finding the character and finding that pain. And so when I hear people say there's the depression or it's a cathartic kind of portrayal or the pain is there, to me, that is the highest compliment because that was what we discussed. And I don't know if I would have brought that human side because I was so in tune with the Peter Finch portrayal. I don't know if I would have been able to step back and think about the pain and think about the human side. I would have been more interested in the rage and the fury because that's the initial impact of the character. So like I said, I really feel this is a true collaboration and between Charles and I, and every time I've worked with him, I just think it is my favorite collaborator that I've worked with in almost anything. I have to say that.
And I'm going to come back to you with a follow-up to that, but I just realized as we're talking, I'm going, we're all talking as though everybody watching us or listening
right.
knows the plot of Network.
Right.
And I'm realizing, you know what? I can't make that assumption. Younger people may not. So Charles, I'll come to you for this one. Very briefly, what is Network all about? I should have led off with this question instead of starting with the assumption that, of course, we all know.
Oh, boy. So synopsis-wise, it's about a television news reporter who goes mad on air, causes ratings to hike up, and about the tailspin that happens from that. I would say that's kind of like the log line.
So it's the story of Tom Skilling is what you're saying.
Yeah, right. There's isobars there, yeah.
What I would say though, that like the heart of the play, like the soul of the play, and I have to sort of echo Paddy Chayefsky, and he said that it's about what does it mean to be human in a world that doesn't value humanity anymore. And we really took the approach of it's about dehumanization and how TV and the media and entertainment and news dehumanizes people. And I our final moment, I don't want to spoil it, but really in on that, and I hope it's as chilling for the audiences as I find it to be. So,
why I walked out and said we need to talk. Jim, my follow-up to your last answer, however, is as you talked about the way Peter Finch portrayed it. And what struck me when you said that was, well, let's also, it was a film. For Peter Finch, it was a film. So he's on a soundstage. He's whatever he's doing. You have the pleasure of doing this in front of a live audience who is more present in the second act than the first act as far as your reality goes. But is that part of what helps you develop the character in a certain way? There are people watching you. You're not on a film soundstage.
Yeah, no, there's no question. In fact, the famous Mad as Hell scene is very different in our show because in the film, as Charles said, you know, this is all about TV news. It takes place in a studio without an audience. It's just the people that work there. And so basically Howard Beale is delivering all of his messages, at least before he gets the Howard Beale show. But when he's an anchorman, he's delivering it to the camera like every other anchorman does. And that Mad as Hell scene is delivered to the camera, not to an audience. What was interesting in the, once again, you cannot discount the importance of the rehearsal process because with an audience there, even though there was no one in the seats, being in the theater, seeing these seats, knowing there's going to be people in there, I started to think, how can I bring them in to this? I don't just want to be preaching to them. It's very religious. I view my Mad as Hell scene as a part tent revival, as a preacher. I've seen Bruce Springsteen 63 times in concert. It's a Bruce Springsteen concert for me. When I'm coming into the audience, when I'm going up to them, when I'm having contact with them, when I'm asking them to join me in my refrains, that's Bruce Springsteen right there. But that is an aspect to me that makes our Howard Beale and that whole scene completely different than the film. It was much more claustrophobic in the movie, but here it is immersive. It is the audience is participating. Me going into the audience, I asked, Charles early on, hey, could I go up? Can I go into the seats on this? Can I come in the back? Can I go, can I come in from the back and come down?
I'm so glad I said yes, too. I almost, and I'm so glad I said yes.
Yeah, and so am I. But that was early on. That was my feeling about it, was how can we bring the audience into this? I saw the play on Broadway, and it was very immersive. And Bryan Cranston came down off the stage, too. But here it's so different because we're not in a big theater with the lobby in the back, or it's a different configuration. And so I'm able to play the crowd, and I'm kind of a natural person like that anyway. So it fits in so well. In fact, there's one scene when I talk to an audience member, and that came about because, once again, Charles said to me, when you deliver this monologue, think of yourself as Mr. Rogers. Hmm. Because it's kind of a lengthy, kind of almost like a lecture. And so I said to him, well, would you mind if I actually spoke this to a, because in my mind, how does Mr. Rogers start? Howdy, neighbor. He's talking to somebody. So once again, why should I talk to the audience when I have them right in front of me? To your point, we're in a theater, let me talk with them. And I think that's one of my favorite parts. And the audience member doesn't know how to react because I sit down right next to them and I joke with them. So it's not just the words. I try to come up with a new little comment every show for who's sitting there. So it's not a plan. That I'm watching before the show starts, who am I going to talk to?
By the way, if somebody was sitting there that you knew, because I, of course, was upset that it wasn't me sitting in that seat to chat.
Well,
with you
were in the middle. You weren't on the aisle.
No, that's right. Well, what did I know? But just out of curiosity, if you saw somebody and you knew them, would you go to that? Is it about that chair and whoever's in it? Or you say, no, I'm
it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of who's in that chair, because I want to find a spot that whoever I talk to, the audience can see good from either the side. And they don't have to crank their neck. So I try to do it like in the second row, so everybody at least has a good vantage point, even though they could probably see it on the screens. And we should talk about the amazing tech side of this show.
Well, I was actually going there next to talk about the set with a comment before I got there, which is to say, and I say this in my review, as you saw, which was, people who think, oh, it's a 7 o'clock show, I'll get there 10 to 7. You don't want to do that. You really want to get there about 6:30, which I assume is when the doors open or so. And you've got, Charles, you got the cast. They're there. They're getting ready for a news broadcast, not paying attention to us in the audience, but they're doing their thing. Out of curiosity, is that part of this? I did not see the Broadway show. Is that in the script? Is what they're saying scripted? Or are you just going, this is my idea or our idea, we're going to do this and just set up for a newscast?
Yeah, more the latter. Yeah, we wanted to create this world that people were walking into because it's going to be so engaging with Howard Beale later on. And if the play's about connection, we want them to be connected and serve as a live studio audience later on and get them feeling like they are part of that world. So yeah, that was something that we threw. I didn't see the Broadway show, so I don't know if they did something like that as well too. But they had people
on the stage, but there wasn't a lot of interaction. You were watching them, but there wasn't a lot of ours is much more kind of in people's faces.
Yeah. And of course here you're, of course I'm judging things like, well, we don't really get a countdown from 10, but anyway, walking through, it's realistic enough. The set. So Charles, I'll come to you in terms of this design. First of all, as Jim mentioned, the video part of this is stunning. I mean, some bucks were spent in making this thing happen. But let me, before we get to that, take a step back, because the great part about Windy City Playhouse is you have this black box space. So every time I go there, I never know what it's going to look like. And what I love is the fact that with the I don't know what you call it, but anyway, you just have the metal piece. You actually have set up this studio audience effect. And unlike Top Dog, Underdog, or, I don't feel like I'm in the audience of a play. I do feel like I've come to a live broadcast of a TV show, and you play that from the beginning. Talk a little bit about that set design, but also the video, because when I sat down, my partner said, oh, this takes place in the 80s. And I saw some of the clips. I went, no, that's the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I, I wish Kevin was on this call too. So Kevin Rolfs is our set designer, and he is brilliant. I mean, he's done every single set we've ever done. He won a Jeff Award for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and been nominated for several since as well too. I mean, he's so good at what he does. And he the
oh,
thing
either Kevin or Jim, and I went with Jim. So
the thing that's so nice about working with him too is a lot of times he and I are very simpatico. Like I have an idea, or he has an idea, and we kind of build off each other's ideas. But I have to also Petter Walbeck and I'm sorry, Petter, DJ Douglas and Chad Lucier, our design team, and as well as Rachel Livingston doing props. I mean, our whole design team, because it's not just Kevin doing the set. It was really like DJ and Chad doing their tech, Petter with the sound, Chase filling in for Petter, and our stage management team, Hannah and Sam. I mean, the whole team, and of course, Jesse's costumes create that world. And I will say the tech stuff was very difficult to do. It wasn't as expensive as I think you might think it is, but it was, I think that made it even more challenging because it was so kind of rudimentary, I suppose.
But do you have to pay for the rights to use all those TV clips and things that you're using throughout?
We got them off YouTube. So
okay.
Off YouTube, and it's all, and I think there's also Craig Duff, who's a professor at the Medill School of Journalism, who is a great dramaturg for this. He used to work at CNN as well too, had just this wealth of knowledge. He said something about we can use like samples, and so that's pretty much what we do. So we're within the legal confines of being able to use that.
Yeah, machine. Because and we don't even get the sound out of them, so you're not really using the So no, I think you're safe. And something that happens, I never like to give anything away. Once in a while, you know, like should I give this away? But so I won't say it, and I'll let you pick up on it. And Jim, I can come to you. Either one can answer this. But when I say not give anything away, I once interviewed the cast of Dear Evan Hansen. And I said, is there anything I shouldn't give away? And if you know Dear Evan Hansen, one of the cast members goes, well, don't say that Connor is dead. I went, he dies in the first 3 seconds of the why is that a secret? But anyway, so here's what I don't think I'm crossing the line. There's a point to where the TV cameras are the TV cameras, and they operate as TV cameras when we're on TV. But there comes a point in the show where they take on a larger life. I'm not going to go deeper than that because you might say, no, don't talk about that. Or you might say, no, it's fine. So I'll come to you, Charles, first as the guardian of what should be secret. Can you talk about how the character, as the play goes on, becomes a character? I'm sorry, how the cameras actually become kind of a character in the show to the extent you're comfortable talking about it?
Yeah, no, I'm very comfortable. I mean, it's, you know, we, again, taking this lens of how TV dehumanizes people. And we look at the very few like intimate moments of the plays, like where it's in people's homes or apartments or lovers talking or lovers quarreling. We started incorporating the camera in. And so it's like this reality TV effect almost, and how it sort of takes the humanity out of it. Like there's not even, you know, you can't even break up with someone without this camera, without commoditizing it really. And so, and I think that's really at like the heart of the piece is it's, you know, strip the technology away and people, not to give too much away at the end either, but that's Howard's final monologue is it's not ideas that matter. It's human beings. And this is a man who desperately wants to connect with people because people have been stripped away. You know, we even now, you know, we're behind our computer screens. We're not actually in a room with each other and, you know, breathing the same air, talking and sweating and whatever together.
So was that your way of sort of bringing 2024 into the process?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like anybody with a platform can say anything they want. And I guess this is how it kind of gets into the political world. You know, if you have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you know, if you have enough followers and if you're charismatic enough, people will believe what you say, even if it's not true. And, you know, and that applies to news media as well, too.
Yes, I can attest to that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, and a lot of these news stations are owned by corporations who have their own corporate interests. So it's like, can you really have unbiased news? You know, and one of the things that was really chilling that Craig said to us was, you know, the product is us, like us watching it. Because the advertisers you know, they spend however many dollars based on how many people are watching the show at any given time for their advertisements. And so, you know, we are the products of these TV and news stations. So it was unsettling. So,
and I think, and I think to your point earlier, Paul, about the film and being the original, you know, founding text, because it was a film before a book or anything else or a play, you know, to Charles' point, the film is really, you know, when it was written, it was written in 75 and it was produced in 76. It was a very contemporary piece of work. It wasn't from 20 years ago, and it was speaking to the times, which I think is one reason why it resonated so much in 1975. And what is just baffling is that this was initially, the film was an absurdist satire on television news and our culture. And Paddy Chayefsky was coming up with, I think he was sitting around thinking of the craziest things he could think of that were so out of the realm of possibility to talk about as possible realities to make his satire so crazy. And the irony is, in 2024, and even when this play was first produced in 2017 in London, they were reality. This he was so prescient, he was so prophetic, even though he came up with the most ridiculous ideas. But this play in the movie talks about the corporate takeover, as Charles just said, the corporate takeover of media outlets. It talks about the entertainment infusing into the news. It talks about reality television. It kind of is a precursor to the Jerry Springer show or the talk show genre of, yeah, like Phil Donahue, who just passed away, of using the audience, of talking about topics. Obviously, Oprah then elevated that from Donahue. But these things in 1975 did not exist. And that's the one thing that I think is getting through when I talk to people after the show. But that's at least a worry of mine was, on some extent, will people get the joke? This is a comedy in some extent. Will they get the satire? Will they get the joke? Because what we are talking about in absurdist terms in the 2024 audience is reality. And that's what makes this piece and makes Paddy Chayefsky, you have to just nod your head to him, because it's like, wow, how the heck did you see this stuff coming? If you take the internet and you replace it for every time Howard Beale says television, it's today.
Yeah. But you, and by the way, if The Bear can be a comedy, this can be whatever you'd like.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Charles, we're almost out of time, but just briefly, you are bookended by some, you know, what Jim's points are really so well thought. And what I thought about is people that I talked to that night, oh, I've seen the show called The Newsroom and I've seen The Morning Show. You know, there are these Apple TV and other kind of venues that do give people, because not everybody works in the world of television. There are people that is where their current reality comes from.
Wait, so what was the question?
So did that influence you in terms of, was that part of what you were thinking about, that people will have seen these other shows, or again, a side issue not relevant here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yes is my answer to it.
Okay. Because, yeah, I just find that's what people were connecting with. I could talk for another 25 minutes with you about, or longer, about this show, but I want people to know where they can get tickets before we are cut off from our chat time. So Network is playing through September 29th. Any extensions? Is that happening, Charles, or September 29th?
I think September 29th is the end date.
Okay. Yeah. Then that's what people have to work with. You can get them at Invictus Theater Co., as in company, InvictusTheaterCo.com. Theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E. Always appreciate when you do that, especially since Jim C's show in the West End. I thank both of you, Jim. It's truly, I think, one of the, well, we'll see what happens award-wise, but I think one of the finest performances in theater this year. Charles.
Oh, thank you very much.
You continue to amaze me in all that you do, and I look forward to working on Fiddler with you next season. Gentlemen, thank you. Don't miss Network. It's phenomenal. Thank you, guys.
I'm as mad as hell.
I'm not going to take it anymore.
Right.